Hey everybody, welcome to the Rusty Wrench. Today's episode is going to be talking about no start once again, but today we're going to be talking about vehicles that crank over but do not start. Before we get into that and give you all the information we have for that, let's talk about the business that brings you this show, MP Mobile Mechanic LLC. If you are in the Southern Colorado region, I encourage you to give us a shout, get a quote from us, and try us out. We focus on being trustworthy, being clean, so our environment, we don't leave a mess at your house. We want to be helpful with this show, with all of our daily video tips, and whenever you call in, we want to inform you, educate you, and not treat you like an idiot. If those are things that you're looking for, then give MP Mobile and Kelly a call, and we'll see what we can do for you. All right, let's get on with the show. So when you're going out, you're starting your car in the morning, it's always the morning. That's going to be our scenario for all of these shows. You're going out in the morning trying to go to work. So go out, your car, try to start your car, cranking over, cranking over, cranking over, cranking over. What the heck? Why won't it start? Well, let's go over that. There's going to be four main things that your engine needs to run. You need to have fuel, you need to have air, you need to have spark, and you need to have compression. If you don't have one of these four things, you're not going to have a running engine. Now, here's a big disclaimer. This is for gas engines. This is not for diesel engines. There are little differences there. So this is for gas engines. Let's start with the first thing, which is going to be a pretty easy thing, which is your spark, which is awesome. My most common issue I come across. So when you're checking out your spark, there's a few different devices that are producing your spark. Obviously, your first thing that everybody knows of is your spark plug. Then you have your spark plug wires. If you have an older vehicle, if you have a newer vehicle, you probably don't have these anymore. You're going to have your coil and then computer. For some vehicles, these two are integrated, but most of the time you have your computer. That's either you're going to be your engine control module, your ignition control module, powertrain control module. That'll be one of those things. You're going to be looking for the main device controlling. Now, when you're checking, let's start with the spark plugs because this is going to be your most common spark issue. And easiest to check out first. So the first thing you want to do when you're checking out your spark plugs is make sure that they are gapped to the appropriate specification for your vehicle. It's most of the time there's a little sticker on the hood or the radiator for your vehicle, and it's gonna have like a bunch of random stuff that you probably don't ever want to read. But on there, it'll say your engine size. And then nearby, it should say spark gap or spark plug gap. It's going to be something like 0.35, 0.44, something like that. That's the number you're going to look. And then you're going to have a little spark plug gapping tool, and you're going to check it with that. You can buy that spark plug gap tool AutoZone, O'Reilly's for like $2 or less than that even. Really simple thing. A tool that you should always have, and everybody should have one of those. Next thing you're going to be checking for is fouling. Now, whenever I pull out a spark plug, even through all the years of experience, I always have a spark plug identification chart. You can just Google spark plug identification chart, and it'll have a bunch of pictures of what certain fouling or wear looks like on the spark plug. And this will tell you a little bit of how your engine is performing, how it's doing. But at the same time, you're going to then tell if that spark plug itself is damaged and is not going to work. So check out the fouling, check out the how the spark plug looks by comparing it to one of those charts. You may have excessive carbon fouling. You may have excessive oil fouling. You can have arcing. One of the main things that I will point out that I see, especially on older spark plugs that haven't been changed out. Well, that's a spark plug, trust me. We got our little spark plug here. So the first thing you're going to see with fouling, most of the time it's going to be on the electrode here. You're going to see fouling on there. You're going to see it bent inward. You could see a lot of oil on the rings, the threads of the spark plug. Now the arcing, most of the time I see that up on the white insulated part of the spark plug. You'll see this kind of dark line on the spark plug, and that means that you have water or oil getting inside that spark plug, and with that wire or coil, it's arcing right there. So you need to get that cleaned up. If you have oil that's on top of that white insulated part of the spark plug or sitting on the spark plug wire or coil, then you need to change your valve cover gaskets. Excessive oil on the spark plugs will cause misfires and won't produce as much spark. So if you have oil leak from the valve covers, replace those valve covers. Most of the time, that's not going to cause your vehicle not to start. It'll cause misfires and a rough running engine. But there have been a few vehicles where it's been a very heavy oil leak where pull out that spark plug wire and I feel like I just released the drain plug because there's oil everywhere. So after you check out these things on the spark plug and you verify that the spark plugs are good, now you want to make sure that you're getting spark to the spark plug for either wires or coil on plugs. That coil on plug is where you have the coil sitting on top now on new vehicles. You want to make sure that spark is being produced through that. So for the coil on plugs, there's a really expensive tool that even most mechanics don't have. I have it because it makes life so much easier. You wave it over the coils, it picks up the electronic magnetic pulse and lets you know that the coil is working. For spark plug wires, there's a little like $5 tester you can buy at the auto parts store that you plug into the end of that and plug into the spark plug, and it'll light up every time that a spark is sent through the wire. That way you know spark is getting to the spark plug and the spark plug wires are working. So for spark plug wires, you're going to need a spark tester to verify that each spark plug wire is working. The other thing to check with spark plug wires, oftentimes, this really is for GM vehicles, especially those the 3100, so 3.1 liter. It's 3.1 liter, I can't remember the other one, but the 3100 series GMs, so the older Buicks, like 1993 to like 2005, those 3100s where you have the V6 engine and the spark plug boots are below the exhaust. If you're pulling that spark plug wire and the boot and the wire separate, you need to replace your spark plug wires. Those were already old and worn out, and it just now with the extra force on it, it broke it. So if you're pulling on your spark plug wires and they're kind of cracking around and breaking or separating, then that's something that you need to have replaced regardless. It may not be the specific cause of your no start, but if you don't have enough spark going through those wires to the spark plug, you're going to have a rough running engine anyway. So get a spark tester, make sure that you have the wires are sending spark to the spark plug. And then you want to check your coil. If you have spark coming to the spark plug with the tester, then your coil's good and your computer's good. If you do not have spark and your spark plug wire, you say you replace them and you're still not having spark, then your coil is most likely going to be the problem. And for that, you're going to need to test to make sure that you're having voltage going to it. So you need 12 volts going to your coil, and then you can do the resistance test, which you're going to have to find specific to your vehicle and coil. Test the resistance. Once again, like I said in the last video, the resistance test on sensors and coils isn't always accurate, but it's a good identifier to figure out if that is working properly. Really, the best way, if you're not getting spark to your spark plug wires and you have power to the coil, then there's a good chance your coil's going out. Your computer could be another issue, especially for that GM 3100. They have a ignition control module mounted on the engines by like the intake manifold, and that ignition control module and the wiring goes out all the time. These are the main things you're going to find. You can, especially if you have diagnostic tools, scanners, you can kind of watch this, the voltage and signals being sent around by the coil and computer to verify those are working. If these are good and you're starting to get into coil or computer area, that's where you might start needing a mechanic, but at least you know you don't have spark. That's the main thing we're identifying here, is that we have the four things. We may not identify exactly what we're needing, but we're figuring out the main area. And then with better research, with more tools and whatnot, you can then figure out, after you've kind of narrowed it down from these into the category. I'm going to try to do the best I can with getting very specific. But for these beginning videos, I'm really just trying to cover the basics. One, to give you an understanding of what to even kind of generally look for, but then just start building and building and building your knowledge and everything, especially your skills. We're gonna have to pause because I need my whiteboard eraser. All right, sorry about that little pause. Had to get my rag here to wipe the board. All right, so we went through all of that. We found out we have spark. Let's just assume we have spark. So now the next thing, this is going to be much easier, I promise, is your fuel. There's two main things to look for with your fuel, or at least two main components that we're going to be talking about. You're going to have your fuel filter and then fuel pump. Let's just add a third one in that popped into my head now. We're going to say fuel line, just because that can be a problem, but it's going to be pretty obvious. So for your fuel system, hopefully you have one of the easy cars and they have a Schrader valve. So on your intake or on your engine, you should be seeing your intake manifold underneath or on top of the intake manifold. You should see a little chrome rail, metal rail, and on that it's going to be 4 to 6 or 8 injectors. At the one of the connection points of that rail, you're going to see a little plastic cap. That underneath that cap, if you screw it off, is your Schrader valve. Now with that Schrader valve, that's the way to test the fuel pressure that's coming to the engine. Get a fuel tester, just turn your key to the on position, and you should be getting hopefully 40 to 60 PSI. This is the general PSI needed for your fuel system to run the engine. Definitely verify that this is the variables that you're looking for your vehicle. It could be higher. I know Volkswagen, they have a manual fuel pump mounted on the engine. That one needs 120 PSI, but that's for a very specific and a performance model vehicle. So double check for your vehicle what the fuel pressure should be with your fuel pressure gauge. after you've verified that you have fuel pressure, or you don't, if you do not have fuel pressure, then you're going to want to check to make sure that you're getting power to the fuel pump. One quick way, just turn the key off and let it sit for a good minute or two. Turn the key back on. Listen very carefully. Sometimes you might need someone laying under the rear of the vehicle, around the gas tank, and you're going to hear a whining, like a pump. And if you hear that, the fuel pump is turning on and it's getting power, but it may not be getting enough pressure. If the fuel pump is getting power, but you're not getting pressure, you need to replace the fuel pump and the fuel filter. Always replace the fuel filter with the pump. Most of the time, a lot of the part companies will not warranty your fuel pump if it goes bad again, if you don't replace the fuel filter. And also, it's very hard to test if your fuel filter is the problem or if it's really the pump. So just replace both at the same time, and that's going to save you money. Not money. It's not really going to save you money if you're replacing both, but it's going to save you headache. All right. I wrote on here the fuel line, because every now and then you may have a punctured fuel line or gas tank. Obviously, this is going to be pretty obvious because you're going to have fuel and smell everywhere, but I'm just going to put that in there. One other thing, if you do not have full power, you don't have the 12 volts to your fuel pump, then you want to make sure that your fuel relay is working. One easy way for that is just to double check that the relay is clicking when you turn the key or cranking over the vehicle. But if you don't have power, a lot of times the connector for the fuel pump is going bad and the wiring there is going bad, or then it's your fuel pump relay. So check out the wiring and the fuel pump relay if you do not have power to the fuel pump. All right, we've got fuel, spark. Let's go to compression, because that's going to be the next easiest one. The air one, overall that's easy, but I added a few things in there because this is the general thing. If we're in 1950s, this is all we're looking for. Now in 2019, we're looking at computers, so air has a bunch of computers in it. Computers are always more difficult to diagnose than mechanical items. All right, so your compression. You may even be asking, what the heck is compression? Well, when your crankshaft is rotating and you're sending those pistons up and down, those pistons are very tightly fit in the cylinder walls, and then your valves have, with your two valve holes, you have your intake and exhaust, those are sealed. So as at certain times, all of that is moving around, and as the piston's coming up, you're compressing that air. You're pushing that air and compressing it and creating a highly compressed environment. There's no other way to say it. And then as that spark is introduced with the air and the fuel, it ignites, pushes down on that piston, and that's where you get your force for the vehicle and driving. So with your compression, there's a few different things that can cause low compression. You can have piston rings going out. You can have a head gasket failure. You can have a burnt valve, or you could have a bent valve. There could be several different things going on within your motor causing low compression. But what we need to know is, do you have good compression? Good compression for the standard vehicle is going to be 100 to 140 PSI. Now, when you're testing the compression, what you do is, obviously, this is a good step to do when you're checking your spark, because you're already removing your spark plugs. So remove all of the spark plugs, put your compression tool into one of the cylinders, make sure you have the throttle open all the way, crank the vehicle over. I do it three turns, three cranks. So the engine should crank over three times. Some vehicles, for the compression test, they say to crank until the reader stops moving. That's something that you want to check, especially with what the PSI should be on your vehicle. All of these things you should check for your specific vehicle so you know exactly what you should be looking for. These are all the general things. So you turn the motor over 3 to 4 turns, and then your reading should be between 100 and 140 PSI. If it is less than this, then there's another thing that you need to be looking for. So say we have a 4-cylinder engine. We've got our 4 cylinders here. We're just going to, let's go with a classic Jeep 4.0. Let's go with a 6-cylinder 4.0. So you did our, on our front to back here, we got our first cylinder. Let's say we got 125 PSI. Next one, we got 127 PSI. Next one, we got 135 PSI. And we got 100 PSI. And we've got 124 PSI. So you've cranked over your engine 3 to 4 turns. You have the throttle body open. You do it on each cylinder. You write, make sure you write down the reading because you can get a lot of numbers mixed up pretty easy. So although this cylinder here, cylinder 5, is within this reading, there's one more variable that most engines have, and that is that the lowest cylinder cannot be 15 to 30% lower than the rest. If it is 15 to 30% lower than the rest, then that motor is done. Because of that one cylinder having low compression, the whole engine is going to have a hard time running properly. So that's why it's not running. Most of the time, if you have one cylinder that's low, it'll kind of start but doesn't want to stay running. Other times, it just won't start. Another thing to keep in mind is that if you do have a lower compression engine, older engine, when it's colder, you lose compression. So on some really cold days, your car may not start, but then on a really warm day, it does start. That's maybe something to keep in mind if you do have an older vehicle. So compression, you have to have it with all the cylinders within the specifications and within 15 to 30% of each other. All right, let's get into the last and hardest bit. This is something hopefully you won't run into, but with today's electronic computer cars, it's going to happen. So your air, obviously you need to have airflow in there. Now, with the new cars, with all the computers, that airflow is monitored by the computer, which then controls the spark and fuel. So if you have, you may have problems with your spark and fuel due to the air. Some of those sensors that you may find these problems with are going to be your MAF sensor, your cam position sensor, or your crank position sensor. So your mass airflow sensor and or MAP, I'm going to put that on there, your mass airflow sensor, metered atmospheric pressure sensor. That's what it should be. Metered atmospheric pressure sensor is your MAP sensor. These are letting the engine know how much air is coming in. That way it can account for it with the correct amount of fuel. You want to have a 14 to 1 fuel air ratio overall for a good running engine. So that's what your engine's trying to do, is get to a 14.1 air to fuel ratio. If your sensor is clogged, the MAF sensor could be easily be clogged. It could be a little dirty. So one thing you could try is the MAF cleaner. MAF cleaner isn't always the best thing. So it's something to, if you want to try it for a free or cheaper fix, clean your MAF sensor, see if that helps anything out. You want to make sure you have 12 volts to the MAF sensor. Make sure your wiring's good. If you have to replace your MAF sensor, listen up. I'll only replace a MAF sensor with an OEM sensor. Go to the dealership and buy the MAF sensor. Do not buy an aftermarket MAF sensor. You're going to make the problem worse. Guaranteed. This is coming from me, who doesn't like to buy from the dealership. Buy the MAF sensor at the dealership. You're going to save yourself money and headaches. Trust me. Next thing, so you have your air fuel ratio from the MAF sensor. Now you have your cam position sensor. This is reading the position of the camshaft, which is turning your valves for the intake and exhaust. So if your engine's trying to throw the fuel or the spark at the wrong time, it's not going to do you any good. If you're trying to throw fuel while the piston's down at the bottom, it's not going to do you any good. So you want to, the cam position sensor is a very big thing that you'll see if your engine's just cranking and cranking and won't start. You want to make sure that you have 12 volts and you can do the resistance test on that as well. But if you have 12 volts and you're not getting good signals from this, the cam position sensor is something you really want the diagnostic on, as well as the crank position sensor. If you're running into these problems where you're starting to get to computer or these sensors, that's when I really would recommend a mechanic, because you just don't want to throw money at all the parts. Sometimes it's just better to throw the money at the diagnostic, save your own time. You're going to spend three hours a week on it trying to figure it out, when a really knowledgeable mechanic may be able to diagnose it in 5 to 30 minutes. Pay the money, have someone save you the time. That way they also save you the money in the future by not replacing a million parts. You just replace the one that's needed. With your crank position sensor, that's detecting where the placement of the crankshaft and your pistons to align with the cam position sensor. So you need both of these to be working together. That one's going to be a 12-volt sensor as well for most vehicles, with the option to test for resistance. Typically, it's going to be pretty easy to figure it out, especially if you have a fuel, spark, or compression issue. Pretty much anybody should be able to diagnose that for you and figure that out. But if these are the main things you're going to be looking for and trying to figure out and diagnose on your car. If your vehicle is not starting, but it is cranking over, hopefully that helps you guys out. If not, I'm sorry. Ask me some more questions and we will dive into this deeper in the future for sure. All right. Let's go on to the rest of the show now, and let's talk about questions of the day. First question is going to be for specific vehicles. This is going to be for the 2014 Plus Jeep, mainly going to be the Cherokee, I believe the Grand Cherokee as well. If you have the ESS system or start stop system. The question is coming from the start stop system check engine light. It'll say on the dashboard that the start stop system is not ready, battery charging. I am still learning about these issues that the Jeeps are having with these, but from what I've been researching and learning about this is what I'm finding. Most of the time, you're going to have one battery. Some dealerships are telling customers that there's two batteries. But a lot of the vehicles have one battery. Your main battery. And if you just replaced your battery and you're having issues, you need to check that you have an AGM battery. If you have a 2014 Plus Jeep Cherokee, you need to have an AGM battery in there. That start-stop system drains a regular battery too much and it can't handle it, so the battery dies quicker or may not maintain the charge needed to run the system. So your first thing, make sure you have a good quality AGM battery. Do the load test on it, like we talked about in the last video for the no start, no crank. Do the load test on your battery. Make sure your battery is good. You could also have a good battery for starting, stopping the vehicle, or turning over the vehicle, but it's not good enough for the start-stop system because it needs to have a certain, it's a very high voltage system that it's using. So you want to make sure that you have a good battery, and there may be a chance that that AGM battery is still not good enough for the start-stop system. The next thing you're going to check is your IBS system. That's your intelligent battery sensor. This is telling your battery and the alternator when to charge. That way it can have the full voltage it needs for the start-stop system. Ooh. And so you want to test that sensor. Some customers have reported that they shook the battery cables and then the light went off. If you have that, most likely your IBS sensor is going to be going out. Really, if you're having issues with this, this isn't going to be an easy thing to diagnose. Even a lot of the dealerships aren't having much information. So take it to someone who really knows these systems and these problems. It's going to save you a lot of time and money, a lot of headaches. I'm hearing that a lot of people don't even like the system. If you are having codes, definitely check out that battery. Check out your IBS sensor. You may have a second auxiliary battery. For most of the Jeeps that do have that, it's going to be next to that AGM battery. It'll be like a small motorcycle battery. You have that checked as well. But most of the Jeeps that I'm hearing about have just the main battery that's AGM. And usually the issues are coming when somebody switches to a regular battery and doesn't realize they need that AGM. So those are just a few things that you could check and what's going on. But overall, if that ESS light is on for your Jeep Cherokee, it's not going to cause too many issues. And if you are having drivability issues due to it, just turn off the system. You can turn it off as you start the vehicle, and that'll get rid of that issue.